today. One man's experience of ending up in intensive care with COVID-19. This interview does contain some distressing scenes, but we believe it's really important to understand how COVID-19 can change people's lives.
We went out for dinner. Cheltenham was awash in racing people at trebles, quadruples in size that week. It's a very important week to Cheltenham. All the bars and all the restaurants are packed. And Zoe and I went out on the Friday night, and it's probable, I suppose, that that's when I got the virus.
Dave Lewins is a generally healthy 60-year-old helicopter pilot who used to be in the RAF and does yoga in his spare time. On the weekend of March the 13th, he was soaking up the atmosphere that the annual Cheltenham Festival brings to his hometown. With his partner Zoe Costello, he was making plans to move house and for a wedding at the end of the year. It was more than a week before the country would lock down. But for Dave and Zoe, the horror of COVID-19 came more quickly than that. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, surviving ICU, a story of recovery.
I'm an ex-Air Force pilot. I left the Air Force after nearly 20 years, having joined straight from school. I went to Monarch as a captain for about 15 years. I then retrained on commercial helicopters, and now I teach helicopter pilots and aeroplane pilots at Gloucester Staverton Airport. Before any of this, I'm one of the directors at Gloucester Brewery, and so I would do 4 days a week there, and I do aerial photography.
Sounds like you do a lot of work.
I don't like sitting around, to be honest.
When did you fall ill?
On the Tuesday afternoon. I work on the top floor of the building. It's a four-floor building, so I'm up and down the stairs all the time. I started feeling tired and particularly dizzy. It was almost like I'd hit a brick wall. There was something really wrong. I wasn't sure what it was. So I just took the laptop home and said, I'll be at home if you need me.
Did you think in your mind this could be COVID?
Not really, no, because at the time I didn't have a temperature or anything like that. It wasn't until a couple of days later then I got the cough, the very, very dry cough. And then I lost my sense of taste and smell. And then I noticed, last of all, by the weekend, that my chest was feeling very, very heavy. It was all a question of when to involve the medics. So it was the Sunday, we call 111.
Is that because you were really quite poorly that weekend?
The guidance that everybody was getting was around self-medicate, self-isolate, and don't bother the NHS unless you really have to.
The NHS sent paramedics dressed in hazmat suits to examine Dave. He was told that if his condition worsened, he should go straight to hospital. So when he became alarmingly breathless, his partner Zoe drove him in.
It wasn't until I finally got admitted to hospital and tested on the Thursday and the results came back on the Saturday that we knew for sure that I did have COVID.
So that was 2 weeks after that first weekend where you think you might have caught it?
Yes. The thing that surprised me about it was how quickly I went from being able to breathe to not being able to breathe. And to be honest, now the days at that stage are starting to blur into one.
Do you remember whether a doctor told you then what your prognosis might be? Did they say you might not survive?
That's one thing he did say to me. He said, I have to say to you that there's a sort of 50-50 chance you won't come through this.
How did you feel?
Well, what can you say? I just said, OK, I understand.
Did you think you were going to die?
So I actually redid my will and printed it out and got the nurses to witness the new will and then put it in my bags, which they did for me.
So you were sorting that out while you were poorly?
Yes.
Do you remember the moment you first opened your eyes and realised you were in ICU?
I do. I managed to open my eyes enough to be able to see that I was on a bed and I could see the blanket, but I was also aware I was hallucinating because I couldn't focus and the blanket looked like it was coming alive. I was aware that I couldn't move, so I was strapped down, if you like. I remember it was deafeningly loud. All the beds were full. There was only one bed that was non-COVID. A poor 20-year-old chap had wrapped himself around a tree in his new car. He was lying a few beds away from me. Everybody else was lying on ventilators or on CPAP-type machines. You can hear people coughing. There's a very specific COVID cough I'll never forget. And, of course, you bring up this very solid mucus, which the nurses appear as if by magic and with suction and goodness knows what. When I did try to swallow it, as soon as it hit my stomach, I was immediately projectile vomiting.
And you were on a ventilator. What did that actually feel like?
In the ventilator itself, I really had no awareness of being in a ventilator, except to say that my breathing was much easier. After I came off the ventilator and put onto the CPAP, the personal ventilation mask, I found that quite an unpleasant experience, mainly because I was still coughing up a lot of hard mucus. And of course, you're wearing a very big and very tight mask.
Were you aware of the NHS staff working around you?
Well, to me, they were coming to me every probably 20 minutes to come and check my blood pressure, my oxygen levels, take blood from my heart. I had a cannula in my neck, so they could take blood directly from my heart. Everyone's running around doing their jobs. I mean, the ICU staff were absolutely phenomenal. Every time I would cough, which was probably every 5 minutes or so, they would appear literally in seconds with the suction machine. And then when they had to change my sheets, which they had to do several times because I had no bodily function at all, they had to clean me up, basically.
It must have been really difficult to realise that they have to look after every single thing.
Exactly. And at that stage, it is very scary.
Must have been scary and incredibly confusing.
It is very confusing, exactly. And whilst visually I was delirious, I was very aware what people were talking about. I was aware of people being told that they may not make it through the night, for example. A person in the bed next to me, I heard that.
You heard that?
Exactly that.
And did you hear any conversations about you?
I remember they came with torches and they were checking my eye dilation. There were two doctors and two nurses forcing my eyes open and shining the light into my eyes. And they were sort of shaking their heads and saying, well, they're fixed and dilated. And my pupils were fully dilated. And then when the light shone on them, they weren't reacting at all. And I had recalled that that's never a good sign. So I had that going on in my head.
Zoe, while all this was happening, you weren't even allowed into the hospital. What were you doing?
Basically, I was in isolation myself because I was recovering from having coronavirus. So I had it the first week Dave had it. So I was basically in isolation, just waiting for the phone to ring to check in with Dave.
Did they tell you how bad his prognosis was?
I spoke to a doctor and she said that he was going to get worse before he got better. That he had a good chance of recovery, but he might not pull through, which was total shock because I just didn't expect him to be in such a serious condition. I just thought he would have gone into hospital, have been there for a couple of days and come back out. So, yeah, it was a total shock.
Through all of this, you couldn't speak to Zoe. When did that change?
I spoke to Zoe the first time the day after I came off the ventilator, but still in the ICU.
I think it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I got a call from the nurse and she said that someone wants to speak to you.
I remember she came to me and she put her hand on my arm and said, I've got Zoe on the phone for you. Like, seriously? And she held the phone by my ear while I chatted to Zoe.
I mean, he was totally out of it still. He was sedated. You could tell that with his voice, but he was... Oh, it was so lovely. It was just the most amazing thing.
Yeah, it was really, really lovely. I mean, it's probably only a 1 minute phone call, but it was definitely the most significant phone call I've had in a while.
And by then, did you know you were past the worst of it?
I was aware by then I was off the ventilator and improving. And then the consultant came round and examined me, and he said that they were going to try and get me on the high dependency unit ward and off the ICU.
What I find amazing is that how he was able to be mentally strong as well, because he's musical. He made up a beat with all the sounds, the different equipment, just to keep his brain active.
Were you aware of time passing?
No, I wasn't aware of how long anything was taking. When I was told it was likely I was going to go to a ward, it seemed like I'd been on the ventilator for at least a week and then off the ventilator for at least another week. But actually, it was a total of 6 days. And then the seventh morning, the physios came around and they helped me stand up and move around.
How did you feel as you came out of the ICU? Must have been emotional.
It was extremely emotional. I can talk about it now, but I couldn't talk about it for days. One of the senior nurses, a lady called Lizzie, she just came and held my hand when she just saw that I'd burst into tears. She just reassured me and explained that it was a very common experience to feel that emotional.
So you'd been moved from the ICU to a high dependency ward, but that was still a place where people were really unwell. Can you describe what that was like?
Eight people slipped away in the 3 days I was on the high dependency ward after the ICU. One of them in particular I was chatting to, who was another COVID sufferer. He was explaining that there'd been a couple in their 20s just passed away that day and cleared the room out for me. He was happy to see that I was coming from the ICU, which was unusual. Most people were going to it. And then there was a very nice chap, and he seemed completely lucid. And but then the doctor came and talked to him behind the curtain and said, I don't think you're going to make it through the night. You're going to need to call your relatives to say your goodbyes. Then the next morning, the bed was empty, and I asked if he'd been moved, and they said no, he'd passed away. You can't imagine the how quickly this was taking people's lives, and people who didn't have underlying health problems as well. The scary side of that was the fact that they were in isolation and they were completely alone.
Coming up, Dave describes how much his experience has changed the way he now thinks about life. Had you been in hospital before ever?
I had testicular cancer when I was 40, so 20 years ago, and I fell off a motorbike when I was 20. So interestingly, the times I've been in hospital have been every 20 years. I'm going to have to watch out when I'm 80, I can see. This has definitely been the worst by far. The testicular cancer, I had chemotherapy, and it never crossed my mind that that wouldn't just be a process that I would go through and then come straight out the other side, which is what happened. But this one, I was aware that people were dying of this.
You've got two grown-up daughters from a previous relationship who are both living abroad. They've seen you go through cancer before this when they were teenagers. This must have been incredibly hard for them.
I think a lot of the emotion that flooded out of me coming out of ICU was exactly down to that point. I was aware that I'd already put them through, well, cancer, and I was aware that they were having to go through it again. Zoe was fantastic with them. She kept them up to date all the time, so they knew exactly what was going on, and she was very reassuring. So actually, once I was able to talk to them and see them and smile and reassure them, it certainly brought the family closer together.
Once you'd moved onto the ward, were you starting to feel better?
I hadn't been able to move my head left or right, because when they took the cannula from my heart out of my neck, the muscles in my neck seized up. I couldn't literally move my neck, and so I couldn't sleep, and I was getting more and more sleep deprived as time went on. When I first came out of the ICU, I couldn't actually hold my hands still. I couldn't text, for example. My hands were just shaking uncontrollably. But again, they reassured me that that would get better quite quickly, and it did. Once I had all the tubes taken out and I was able to walk around the ward, I noticed that I'd lost a lot of my legs in terms of muscle mass, and they were like jelly. And the consultant had told me that you can lose basically your quad strength in about 4 days. And I'd been on my back for way over a couple of weeks by then.
Do you remember the first time you looked in the mirror?
I do, actually, now you mention it. In the ward, the first time I went to have a shower, and there was a mirror in there, and I just thought, I remember looking at myself thinking, oh my God, you have aged. I remember the first time I looked at my hands and I thought they're my dad's hands. they were shaking and they looked really very, very old.
How did you manage to get strong enough to eventually leave hospital?
Literally, I just walked round and round the ward as often as I could. And then on that last morning, it was sort of preparing myself to be able to convince the consultant that maybe he could let me out and I would be sensible and I wouldn't overdo it. I really, really had to go home, and he very kindly let me go home. I called Zoe. She came and picked me up, drove me home, and I got into bed and slept for 12 hours solid.
That must have felt like such a relief to be back in your own bed and able to take proper rest. You've been home now for just over 2 weeks. How's it been going?
So for the first 4 days when I got home, I was eating a lot, but I was still losing a pound a day. I went on to lose nearly a stone and almost all from my legs. I would say the hardest thing right now is the energy. I'm literally having to drag myself out of bed, walk up and down the stairs. I was using the stairs as sort of training ground. We've been going for walks every day, just exercise walks, gradually extending them. And for the last 3 days, we've done a 2 mile walk around the block, basically.
How do you feel now?
Walking around the block, I find really easy now. My legs are fine. I'm starting to outpace Zoe, which is good.
What about concentration? I mean, are you anywhere near a position where you could work, for example?
No, my concentration is still very much lacking. I've got this crowdfunding campaign that I need to get to jump back on as soon as I can. Every time I've gone onto the website and started on the form, I've literally just found myself drifting off. So that is going to take a little while. And talking to the consultant, he said he would be really surprised if my concentration was back in, you know, a couple of weeks. He thinks it'll be a lot longer than that.
And I know that a doctor pointed you to websites to support people coming out of ICU. What sort of things do they say?
Effectively, it's like treating people who have had PTSD. Yeah, I think a lot of people get depressed. Certainly, talking it through with the consultant, they've said that, like PTSD sufferers, the biggest thing is talking about it. I would say that for a short time, maybe a week, I was in that situation. I've talked to a lot of people about it, a lot of friends, and now I can talk about it without getting emotional at all. And it very much changes people's lives. And it's definitely changed my outlook on life again.
Obviously, we've seen Boris Johnson also fall seriously ill with COVID-19 and go into intensive care, although he didn't need as much intervention as you did. I did wonder about the way they described him as being in good spirits during that period in hospital. Did you have any thoughts about that?
It's a good question, actually. I would say I'm delighted that he's done well, of course. Having said that, the only spirits I can recall were when the nurses and doctors were being very caring, and I remember thanking them every time they did something for me. There's no sort of thing as in my head at that stage as good spirits, because you're literally lying there waiting to get better. That you're not sort of reading the paper or something like that. In an ICU, you are flat on your back, largely sedated, and having test after test after test and medication after medication.
It's very clear that this experience has changed the way you look at the world. And I just guess I want to ask, has it changed your priorities and has it changed you?
It's definitely changed my priorities. I do work pretty hard. I actually enjoy working. But now I'm certainly talking to Zoe about how we sort of redress the work-life balance, because I really would like now to make damn sure that come 5 o'clock we stop working and sort of enjoy the evening with the kids and that sort of thing.
And just finally, what are your plans for the future?
get married as soon as possible, move into this house as soon as possible. We planned on getting married back in December. Now it looks like it's still going to be December because no one can get married at the moment. And look forward to a future.
Dave, thank you so much. And I am so glad that you're well on the road to recovery.
Thanks very much, Anushka. I really appreciate your talk. Thank you.
That was Dave Lewins and Zoe Costello. Do read all the latest on COVID-19 at theguardian.com. Thanks as ever for your kind reviews about Today in Focus. Do also listen to Science Weekly. That's it for today. My thanks to Dave and Zoe and to all the NHS staff and carers who are working so hard across the country to save lives. Don't forget to clap at 8 tonight. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Ian Chambers. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.